Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
There's 525,600 minutes in an entire calendar year. 0.3% of your time will be spent playing college basketball at a competitive level in 1 year. So the question is, what are you doing the other 99.7%, right? Is everything in preparation for that selection Sunday day, right? So it's your job to make sure that your perception matches up with your reality. And a whole lot of people like to post on Instagram and Twitter about what they're doing, but it doesn't matter, man. Like, you have to do that work, you know?
Today's podcast is brought to you by the Rising Coaches Association, the biggest coaching tree in all of basketball. Sign up for the Rising Coaches Association now for just $120 a year and become part of our community, relationships, and development. We talk about it all the time. There's no straight lines in this profession. There's only ups and downs. You need a community that knows exactly what you're going through and has been there before to help lean on during the rough times of the industry. You need genuine relationships, not just exchanging numbers, not just meeting new people at the Final Four in the off season. You should be doing it all year round, and we provide tremendous opportunities to create those genuine relationships all through the year. And finally, development. We have so much content and so many resources so that you can work on your craft and become a better coach. Because we put such a premium and an emphasis on helping you establish new, genuine relationships, it takes all of the political BS side of the business out of the equation for you. All of that gets removed off of your plate. You can just worry about being you, making new friends in the business, and working on your craft and becoming the best coach that you can be and impacting the people that you're around on a daily basis. For more information, visit risingcoaches.com/membership on risingcoaches.com. All right, well, welcome everybody to a real conversation. Today we're joined by Bharat Mohan of Systems to Leadership Consulting. Before we jump into it and start diving in with Bharat, which I'm super excited to do, we have lots to talk about in terms of culture and how to implement them and what a good culture should look like. Obviously, that term gets thrown around so much. So looking forward to defining it and figuring out, you know, best uses and best techniques. But before we get into that, I just want to mention briefly, go visit risingcoaches.com. If you're not already a member, check out the member benefits on our page. It's $120 a year, and we give you three things. We give you community, relationships, and development. And, you know, we talk about it all the time, but with community, you know, like Bharat, I'm sure you can relate to this, but there's times in the coaching business where you're going to definitely go through the valleys and, you know, there's ups, but there's definitely a lot of downs. And, you know, as supportive as family is and friends are, which is amazing, you know, if they haven't lived it in the profession itself, there's always that, like, you know, translation that you got to make for them. And sometimes talking to somebody and having that support system of people who have been through it like you have is so invaluable. And then with our relationships that happen organically and actively in our membership, the big premium is on genuine relationships, not just exchanging a phone call or a name or a number and never talking again. We really strive to help our members create genuine relationships in the profession, which, like all businesses, but especially in athletics, you know, your relationships and your network is really the most valuable thing you have. And then finally, the development. You know, we're constantly bringing in experts like Bharat and many, many others to help you add to your toolbox and work on your craft so you can actually, you know, not have to worry about playing politics. And you can just focus on being really, really good at coaching your team and impacting the lives that you're around daily. So, Bharat, that's my quick plug for Rising Coaches. Visit risingcoaches.com for more info. And now super excited to get into a real conversation with Bharat Mohan. Bharat, good afternoon.
How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Man, I get to talk for as long as you'll give me time. So I'm very, very excited to talk to you. I think Rising Coaches does great work. You talked about genuine relationships, and we'll talk a little bit about my background. I left the game of basketball for a little while. I'm still technically out of it, but reconnecting with it. And I'll tell you, no other industry, no other place that I've been, and like 10 toes down in my life, have I met people who build genuine relationships the way that coaches in basketball do. So I got to echo everything that you just said.
No, I appreciate that. And yeah, you certainly came up through the basketball profession as a manager, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I started at Rutgers men's basketball as a student manager there. This was back when we were in the Big East. So that dates me a little bit, right? I'm on the older side now. I was getting my economics major there. I was majoring in economics and getting my bachelor's there. And once I graduated, I went out to San Diego State. Coach Fisher gave me a graduate manager, graduate assistant spot on his staff, pursuing a master's in economics while I was there. And that econ background, there's a lot of statistics and econometrics and the Houston Rockets like that. And they gave me some draft analytics work to do on the side while I was in undergrad and grad school. So some of the coolest jobs that you could possibly want to work on between the ages of 19 and 22, you know? But I've always kind of really appreciated the diversity of work, diversity of experiences. I loved my time in basketball, but just thought there was a big world out there that I could learn from, right? So I left basketball, went to a corporate job doing data analytics at a large tech company here in San Diego, and I was on the people analytics team. So the outcome is about how do we improve the employee experience? It's not about business intelligence or marketing analytics. It's about what can we do to improve the employee experience outside of just giving more money or better benefits, right? And one of the ways that I helped contribute to that team was evaluating the effectiveness of our leadership development programs there. So which programs help people get promoted the fastest or see higher performance ratings after they go through these programs. And as I kind of talked to you on the phone a little bit about when we connected, you could have the smartest math person in the entire world, but if they don't understand the topic, you don't know how to measure things correctly. And when you're talking about research, you're not just answering questions, you're coming up with new questions, right? You're coming up with the most valuable questions you could possibly answer. So that project, I had to deep dive into what does leadership development look like, right? Like what does leadership look like? How is it taught? What are some of the principles of it? And I really liked it. I felt I had a technical background, but I needed to kind of branch out a little bit more and connect the analytics with how do we change attitudes and behaviors in people? How can we improve people in terms of their leadership capacity? So left my corporate job, went to go get my PhD, studied that for 4 years, met an awesome classmate my very first year. If you're impressed by me, she's 10 times better than me. Her name's Dr. Alyssa Haddad. She worked in the Navy. She worked in the financial services sector, master's from business school. She taught a number of classes at the graduate and undergraduate level related to leadership and culture and group dynamics. So in 2019, when it came time to graduate, we put our heads together and we're like, what can we go do for a job? And we decided to form our own company. So that's what we've been doing for the last year, serving nonprofits, venture capital firms, corporate, higher ed. And when COVID hit, it just hit a natural reset. And I was like, you know what? I think there's some value for what we do here for the basketball community. Why don't I reconnect and see if there's any interest? And it's been awesome to reconnect and form those genuine relationships with people. People really are interested in the idea of leadership and culture and how that might be able to help them in their journey through the sport. And I'm just super stoked to be able to talk about that with people, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much crossover between business and running, you know, a basketball team or a football program, whatever. And I feel like coaches, I feel like business does a great job of taking lessons from sports and applying it to their world. But I feel like coaches don't really do a great job of taking lessons from the corporate world and implementing them into their team. They go cross sports all the time. A basketball coach will talk about a football program or vice versa, but there's so many lessons to be learned from a successful business, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, I think you bring up something that always has brought me back to basketball, which is no matter where you are, people love sports. Not everyone, but people in corporate see value in learning from sports, right? So I was just like, well, there's got to be some value in that crossover from business back to sports. And I've been lucky enough to find people who are interested in it, who want to learn more. And the thing that I've heard from people in the basketball community over the last few months is I can point to experiences about everything that you're talking about. I just didn't really have words for it, right? And high clarity equals high performance. If I have the words for it, I can communicate it to my team better. When I head into a job interview for a head coaching spot, never having been a head coach before, when I get asked, what kind of culture am I going to build and how am I going to build that? I have the values that I'm going to outline and say, this is exactly how we're going to build it, right? So nothing that Alyssa and I do is easy in the sense of here's the answer. But we can provide a framework for you to kind of refine what you think your values are, how you would engage in that culture, ways to think about it. And we can kind of be a sounding board as, as you're kind of working through that, you know. So we love the work that we do. And I mean, I'm just so lucky that my business partner supports us going back to basketball, and she's super interested in it. So, you know, we're just having a great time.
Okay, cool. Enough background. Let's get right to the good stuff.
Got you. Got you. One of the ways that you can think about culture, right? The way that we look at it is you can create it, you can embed it, and then you can change it. And that's a loop, right? You're constantly thinking about your culture and how you can do that as a loop, because guess what? Reality is complex and difficult. Reality doesn't stop. And your culture is never static. It's always dynamic. You're always looking to create and then embed and then change and then reiterate, right? There's a researcher named Simon Sinek. And if you've been lucky enough to watch his TED Talk about Start With Why, I apologize for kind of, you know, giving that background again. But if you haven't seen it yet, definitely check out the video. But I'll borrow from what he's saying on that, which is every organization and person knows what they do. A lot of them know how they do it, but very few know why they do it, right? And we can talk about the organizational level, and we can also talk about the individual level. So two examples, right? Apple, I'm talking to you on my MacBook, and I have an iPhone, and I know you have an iPhone too, because we've been iMessaging, right? There's no reason why they should be so much more successful than any other tech company. But here's the marketing message from every other tech company. We build great technology. We have great designs and the users like it. Go buy one. Apple, though, starts with their why. They say every single thing that we do challenges the status quo. We think differently about everything we do. How do we do it? We build technology that has sleek designs and users like to use it. Go ahead and buy one, because you buy into our message. People don't buy what you do. They buy why you do it, right? And if we're talking about the individual level, and I think it's a topic that's important to talk about with what's going on in society today, in the 1960s, 250,000 people showed up to listen to Martin Luther King Jr.'s speech, right? And the speech is, I have a dream. Not I have a plan, because plans tell you what to do and how to do it. But he sells you on the dream, the why, the beliefs, right? The values. And that's where culture starts. You have to know what your values are. You have to know what your why is, right? It's easier said than done. So you have to know what your why is. And one of the things that I tell people is you can know your personal why, but that doesn't necessarily translate to the team culture and the team wise, right? So an example in basketball, Adam, is we'll have coaches talk to us and be like, you know what? If I need to put up three core values on my board, right, that I want everyone in my team to buy into, hard work. I think hard work is important. I define myself by hard work. We define our program by hard work, right? I'm like, okay, cool. Here's the scenario. What happens if your best, most productive player, the one that's going to go play at the next level, the one that's responsible for your wins, is not your hardest worker? Are their minutes going to get cut? And some coaches are like, well, it depends. If they're the 15th hardest worker on the team, yeah, but if they're the second or third, I'm like, no, that's where we stop here. Because core values, your why, they're non-negotiable. There's no scenario in which you move away from those core values, right? So if you're a team where it's, I'm going to reward hard work, that's totally fine. But if there's any scenario in which it's hard work is not the one thing I'm rewarding each time, and the behavior that I'm correcting, if it's not there, it can't be one of your three core values, right? So you really have to process what values make sense, how am I rewarding them, and how does that kind of make sense in terms of creating your culture? And this is a difficult process, right? You really have to come down to what's a core value and what's a flex value. A lot of times we think our flex values are core. We're like, we will never move away from them. Now, there are scenarios in which you're going to move away from some of them. What are the three or four values that you define as your core values? And you got to talk about it. You got to have your sounding board, right? You got to have that community who brings up, here are the ways that it's going to be an issue if you walk away from it. You know what I mean?
So I love the example you give of, you know, if you talk about hard work and your best player isn't your hardest worker.
Yeah.
Because that's an example we can all relate to in the coaching world, 100%. And you all know, like, and coaches know that when they get a team where their best player is their hardest worker, it's like, okay, now we got a chance to do something special.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Talk more about, I know you said it's a hard process to figure out what those values are and a core value versus a flex value. First of all, a flex value is what? A value that you're flexible on?
Flex value would be, I do this 99% of the time. We define ourselves 99% of the time. It's very important to me. It's how I, like, first 10 words I describe myself, right? If there's ever a way that you move away from that at the team level, it's not a core value. You can have more core values for yourself as an individual. Adam, you can define yourself as a hard worker all you want. But when you take it to the team level and you're saying, this is how we unite our team, this is what's expected on our team, you can expect hard work day to day, right? But when you're talking about as a coach, here are the decisions I'm making about the minutes and how we're going to do this, it doesn't mean that hard work doesn't matter. It just means that it's not rewarded 100% of the time. So I hope that kind of clarifies it a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Are there any exercises that you give people to help them identify what their values are?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, there are exercises that we do for idea generation. Okay, so Alyssa and I have something called values cards. 50 cards with values on the front, and on the back, they're actually definitions too, right? We're very intentional about how we pick them. And it's, you take 50 cards and you give them to whoever's in your group. We've done this with some nonprofits and it's like 30 managers or whatever. We say, from this 50, pick your top 10. From those top 10, make your top 5. From those top 5, pick your top 3. And the three words you end up with aren't the goal. It's just, what was that process like? It's really hard to whittle down to make decisions between what matters more, my family or my spirituality, right? Hard work or whatever, intelligence or whatever, right? And you feel a sense of loss when you realize that you have to make a choice about these things. The other thing that Alyssa and I talk about is you may disagree with some of the definitions on the back, right? So you need to have a very clear idea about what those words mean. And the other thing is we picked 50 words intentionally, but those aren't the only 50 words out there, right? So what wasn't included in the list that you think are more important than those three? And that helps you at the individual level kind of think about it, right? At the group level, it's, if a coach calls us up being like, here's what I'm thinking about for the culture of my team, it's exercises like those in terms of, you say hard work, are you truly going to align 100% of the time with the value of hard work? If the answer is no, let's keep talking a little bit more, right? Again, there's no right answers, Adam. It's just a matter of, are you truly going to align 100% of the time with your core values? I can give you an example of a culture that I've thought about where there was some intention behind it that I think was good. So I got to talk to Trevor Woodruff, who's the coach of Bucknell Women's Basketball, right? And Coach Woodruff was saying, our three core values are tough, smart, together. TST is a hashtag he puts on his Twitter, right? So I asked him, like, how did you come down to those three when there's a million words out there, right? And he was like, I can't reverse engineer the process of how I landed on those three. What I can tell you, though, is that there are two T's in there. Together comes after tough, because if we're together, it doesn't matter. We could be weak together. We could be dumb together, right? But tough and smart have to come before together. And in doing my own reflection of, if I were eligible to play for this culture, would I want to? I thought about it. I'm like, yeah, I would. And here's why. When I think of tough, the first thing that comes to my mind is physical toughness. I know there's mental toughness, but there's the first thing that comes to my mind with tough is physical. And then smart, that's everything up here, right? Mentally. And then together implies the emotional bond that you create with other people. So that culture right there, holistically, with those three core values that you can stick to every single day, imply the physical, mental, and emotional parts of this game. That last word brings in the fact that you're not doing this as an individual. And I think that culture kind of makes sense.
For sure. I love it. Okay. So after you do the hard work of self-awareness and figuring out what you want to be about, now you got to embed it, right?
Adam, the way that culture works is that it's first predicated on your beliefs and values, but those beliefs and values have to drive behavior. And not just of yourself, but of everyone on your team, because we're talking about a team culture, right? And the question is, how are you going to line up every single thing that you do in your program day to day to align with that culture, right? This is a good exercise in the sense that you always have to know that embedding is the next step. So as you're kind of figuring out what your core values are, you also have to keep in mind, well, how does that look in practice, right? You always start with your why. So I'll give you an example from Coach Masiarello at Siena Men's Basketball. Our why at Siena Men's Basketball is that we prepare young men for life, and we use basketball to do it. How do we do that? We create an atmosphere in which we reflect what real life is like during our basketball practices, during games, during our expectations outside in the classroom and stuff. What? So here's an example in practice. They do live drills in practice where they split up the team and it's competitive. You keep score about how the teams are doing. When the clock hits 000 and the drill's over, you have a winning team and you have a losing team. Losers go to the sideline for water and a break. Winners get on the baseline and they run sprints and suicides. Why? Because in life, when you win, you get rewarded with the opportunity to do more work. In a desk job, when you win a promotion, you don't just get to coast. You have more work to do now, right? And in basketball, when Siena men's basketball reaches their conference tournament, if they win that first day, they get the right to play tomorrow against conceivably a better team than they played against in the first day, right? So when you win, we're going to ingrain in you that you better be ready to do more work. That's your reward. Not going back home, sitting on the couch, eating Fruit Loops and watching Netflix. That's not the reward for winners. That's not how life works, right? So are you thinking at that level in terms of how do our practice behaviors reflect what our why is? Another example that I'll give you, I was on a conference call with Coach Musselman of Arkansas basketball. And he was talking about his time at Nevada, his second year as head coach there. He really felt that he had an NCAA team. So the locker room code for the guys to get into the locker room before they could go do whatever they need to do for basketball was the date of Selection Sunday. So every time that they're going into the locker room to go do what they need to do, they have to type in the date of Selection Sunday. And that why is explained to them. That may seem like the stupidest, smallest detail, but that's literally speaking into existence what our goals are, what our values are, our culture is. We want to win, and this is how we're going to do it, right? So I hope those examples kind of make some sense in terms of embedding a culture and just how detail-oriented you have to be.
Yeah, I love those examples. And a huge shout-out to Coach Carm, who's a big contributor of ours. And
he is an amazing, amazing man. I've been blessed to work for Coach Fisher and some Hall of Fame coaches, but Coach Carm, man, like his detail orientation around culture is phenomenal, right? So I hear you.
And as real and genuine as a person as you'll
absolutely
find.
Just a great guy to connect with. And as you talk about, genuine relationships are all it's about, man. I'll say one last thing about this, Adam. This framework, again, it's not easy, but I think it's a good image for up and coming coaches to have, right? When you're talking about culture, you want one eye in a microscope, looking at all the little tiny details of these microscopic things that you're doing day to day. Simultaneously, your other eye is in a telescope looking at the big picture, okay? And everything between the tiny little microscopic details and the big picture that you're seeing in the sky have to align. It's not easy, but you have to juggle both of these things in terms of building a culture for your program where it's what I want our core values have to be, what I want our core values to be have to be reflected in our day-to-day, and these day-to-day things build up to the overall culture that we want deep into the future as well.
I love it. All right. I have a question that I ask a lot of guests.
Yeah.
This came to my mind. Like, I got to ask them right now. You talk about speaking things into existence with your Eric Musselman example, where they're punching in the date of Selection Sunday to unlock the door to the locker room. Okay. Is perception reality?
No, it's a great, great, great question. No, it's not. You can have plenty of people with pie in the sky ideas about how they think things are going. But that doesn't mean that there's no relationship. If you do things correctly, if you're willing to put in the work, you can make perception your reality, right? But it's not as simple as is perception reality. There are plenty of teams that I'm sure is like, our goal is to hear our names on Selection Sunday, and they're not willing to do the day-to-day stuff, right? Every single thing in the process, commitment to doing everything right each and every day, that's hard work and people can fall off it, right? The thing that I say to you, Adam, about perception being a reality is that you have a lot more control than you think you do about things. The way that I explain it is, best case scenario is you get to play 40 games in a college basketball season. And let's say coach tells you, you get to play all 40 minutes every game. You're playing 1600 minutes of college basketball at the Division I level in one season. There's 525,600 minutes in an entire calendar year. 0.3% of your time will be spent playing college basketball at a competitive level in one year. So the question is, what are you doing the other 99.7%, right? Is everything in preparation for that Selection Sunday date, right? So it's your job to make sure that your perception matches up with your reality. And a whole lot of people like to post on Instagram and Twitter about what they're doing, but it doesn't matter, man. Like, you have to do that work, you know?
I love it. Okay, this is a real conversation with Bharat Mohan of System to Leadership Consulting. Everyone talks about culture. We're actually spending this hour defining what culture is and how to embed it. Okay, so we've created our culture. We've started to embed it. Did we finish embedding it?
Yeah. We can move on. Yeah.
Okay. And then the third piece of it is changing it.
Yeah. And this is the most difficult thing for people to understand, because by definition, your core values shouldn't change, right? By definition, I told you that's what you're doing 100% of the time. Now, there are scenarios in which people haven't been very intentional with their culture. So if your ops coach is like, hey, coach, we got to like redesign our locker room, use this as an opportunity to change your signage and really, really put in three core values that matter there, right? But if you're not at that level where, I don't know, you're legitimately renovating your building and have the natural opportunity to change it, the way that I say it is there's a difference between culture and climate. Okay, so let's say you did everything right with your intention of your culture, you're embedding it correctly. Well, guess what? At the college level, dudes are graduating. Women are going on to play in the WNBA, and you have incoming recruits coming in, right? And by definition, the details of what you do day to day changes. Culture is the umbrella where this is just what we are. This is how we do things, right? But climate is day to day. What do the day to day details look like, right? When you're on the receiving end of the climate changing, it feels like the culture is changing, right? And I don't think there's any value in a coach trying to explain to their players, no, the culture's not changing. It's just the climate. That's such a dumb distinction to make. It's purely academic, right? What you do have to do is communicate with players that there are some levels of detail that are going to be changing. Get ahead of the fact that your third year and fourth year players are maybe used to a certain way that you're doing things, and now it's going to change. But always come back to our core values haven't changed. This actually hasn't changed at all, right? So it's just the day-to-day, the way that we approach it. The culture technically isn't changing. I get it feels like that, but we are still Mississippi State basketball. We are still San Diego State basketball. We are, you know, Clemson basketball, right? And what that means, and have players understand the distinction between the day-to-day changing versus the culture changing. I'll give you an example that's not related to basketball, but why it's so tough for people to embrace change. I talked to a person who was in a job where they used to hand out free sodas in the break rooms and stuff, and in each of the conference rooms. Messaging came out at some point where it's like, we're going to do away with this. We want our employees to be healthy and all that. But pretty transparently, it was just, there was like a budget crisis, and this was a way to cut it, right? And I was talking to someone, and they were like, can you believe this BS? They're cutting our soda. And I was looking at them, and I was like, dude, you don't even drink soda. How does this matter to you at all? Like, why do you care, right? And it feels like a sense of loss. It feels like there's something bigger going on where the espoused values aren't lining up with the day-to-day, even though it's the right decision, even though it does keep people healthier. I'm more than happy personally with money going into my bonus check than to sodas in the break room I'm not drinking. It feels like something's changing, and you have to manage that as a coach and have that inform how you're embedding stuff, how you're communicating it, and always coming back to the core values of why.
I love it. Okay. What are some common mistakes that you see programs, cultures, businesses make?
Love it. Love it. The biggest thing is, number one, you don't give a crap about the relationships you're building. They're not genuine, and there's no trust involved. You can communicate till you're blue in the face, but it does not matter if you don't have the buy-in from people about, yeah, I think they're telling me the truth about the culture, right? And what the core values are. The second is a misalignment between behaviors and what the values are. This is why I love basketball, though. Every single drill that we do, if I just hit a pause button and went to the players and be like, do you understand why you're doing this drill? Do you understand why winners go on the baseline and run? They should be able to explain it to me. In the office, how often is there a day-to-day drill that you're doing that aligns with the cultural values, right? The next thing is that you see people getting rewarded despite these values being thrown in your face. Some people say, we value relationships, and we value, you know, treating each other with respect, and we value partnerships. Like, dude, I see this vice president, and I know how they got there. They treated people like absolute garbage. You know what I mean? Like, there's no way you can claim these things. And that actually makes people really angry, right? Purely a basketball sense, what I'd say the biggest challenge is that I've already explained to you how hard it is to create a culture for your players and your team. There's also Hey, did I lose you out? You hear me?
We got you back. Yep.
Perfect. So what I was saying is There is nowhere to hide in basketball. There's at most 15 players or so. There's a coaching staff of maybe six people, some ancillary staff. If you are not doing what you're asking your players to do with your coaching staff, they're going to see it. If there's any kind of misalignment between the work the coaching staff is doing for how they communicate, if assistant coaches have a voice in practice, if they're practicing their own leadership, if they're espousing the values that are espoused in the program, but it's not happening at the coaching staff level, there are going to be problems. If you're asking your players to sacrifice and be good teammates, you better be good coaches to each other. You know, and again, this is a big, big, big difficulty for head coaches is, so you're telling me I got to instill a culture, I got to create it, I got to embed it, I got to change it for players, and then I got to do the right thing with my coaching staff where I'm building assistant coaches up, where I'm giving them responsibilities so that I'm treating them so well that they can go get another job, be a head coach. Yeah, that's exactly what you have to do. I never promised it was going to be easy, dude. And the other problem that I have as a consultant and Alyssa faces as well is people are like, we're paying you money to do this. Give us the answers. I'm like, dude, I don't have the answers. All I can tell you is these are the considerations. I'm your sounding board. Let me reply back with what I see the problems are or ways you can align. But I can't tell you what your values are. I can't tell you exactly how you should go about doing this. If I did, I'd be far more rich and I'd be a head coach somewhere. So don't ask me for answers. I can work with you and collaborate with you in a humble way to be like, maybe this would be helpful, or maybe you should consider this and that.
Okay. One of the issues with being an assistant coach,
yeah,
we run into is it's not your program. So you're sitting there, you're climbing yourself up the ladder for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. But you're always having to buy into someone else's. And in the back of your mind, you're always thinking about, when I get my program, I'm going to do it this way. Should individuals go through this process and have their own individual set of values? And or is that overkill? Is that not necessary? Do you kind of understand what I'm asking? Like whether you're an assistant or a head coach, would it be advisable to like come up with my own core values and my own personal culture of how I act and interact with people on a daily basis?
100%.
Is this more for like an organization?
You cannot bring yourself to a team if you don't understand yourself. You cannot create genuine relationships, or they're not going to be as high of ceiling as possible if you don't know your own identity. And again, Adam, I told you that it's creating, embedding, changing, and that's a loop at the organizational level. I'm constantly refining what my core values are and how I approach things. I think I know what I'm always going to stick to. And the more that I know myself, when you're going in for interviews for other jobs and stuff, you can figure out whether this is the right fit for you, whether you think you're going to succeed based on what the administration is telling you that you got to do. What I would say is this: the dominant strategy in whatever role you're in, if you're an assistant coach, be 10 toes down. Be fully where you are, where your feet are. Do not break the culture. Do not make the head coach's job any harder, because the more success you have as a team, you're going to get looks for your job. That doesn't mean that you think everything is done perfect or you're going to adopt exactly the way it is at wherever you are for your next job, right? So do some reflection, and that's a big piece of it, is self-awareness and reflection, taking the time to do kind of like an autopsy post-mortem after the season's over about how things went, where your voice was, what you think. But also game to game, day to day, you should set aside some time to figure out who you are as an individual, what you would do if you had your own program, how you would do things differently, what you would borrow from the coaching staff that you're with right now that works. But what are some things that you're like, that's just not authentically me, and I kind of got to change some stuff up a little bit?
Okay. Let's get into some of the like learning styles, the single loop, double loop.
Yeah.
And all that.
Absolutely.
Stuff.
So there are some principles of learning organizations, right? And this comes back to the, in order of how it should be, the why, the how, and the what. Okay. You always care about results, right? A lot of organizations use the what to then inform the results, and then there's a loop, right? So here's what I do. Here are the results that I got. I don't like the results. Let me change what I do. Let me see what the results are now. Okay, let's keep doing this because this works, and then we can adjust this. That's single loop learning, right? And that asks the question, are we doing things the right way? Okay. Then on the second level, you add the how. Okay. So this is, you're looking more into your processes about how this works, right? So how you do things informs the what that you do, which informs the results that you get. And then it influences the how you do things again, which influences the what and how. And that's double loop learning. The question you're answering there is, are we even doing the right things? So not the right way, but are we doing the right things, period, right? And triple loop learning adds in the why, right? And the question is, how am I deciding what is right? Okay, and that's where the culture and the values all come in. I've had a lot of discussions about how this applies to me personally, right? When I'm asking myself that triple loop learning question about how am I deciding what's right? I'm trying to get back into basketball and do some consulting with leadership and culture, right? My entire network, from Rutgers men's basketball, San Diego State men's basketball, the Houston Rockets, the people that I've been talking to on coaches calls, are all on the men's basketball side. I love basketball, and I'm ignoring 50% of the game here. There's some really talented women out there and really talented women's basketball programs, and I've seen some of the stuff that they've talked about on coaches calls where the women's game actually, when they're recruiting, they have a very clear definition of what their core values are. I've seen a mission statement from UCLA women's basketball. They're incredibly committed to community service and developing leaders in their players to go do something in their communities outside of just when the ball's bouncing, right? And there's so much that I can take from that game, but I need to be more intentional about going that way, about how am I deciding what's right, right? So I need to be more intentional about reaching out to people in the women's game, seeing what I can learn from them, and then bring it back to the concept about leadership and culture building, right? So all programs should be trying to do this. Again, it's a lot of work, but you have to do it, right? So you got to look into the why, the how, and the what in order to truly keep iterating and growing as a program in terms of your culture.
Okay. If anybody, whether they're a coach or they work in a business or whatever, is interested in working with you, where do they go? Give us a website or whatever.
www.system2leaders, systemtwoleaders.com. And you can also email me at Bharat, Bharat, at systemtwoleaders.com. So systemtwoleaders.com. I know I just made it really, really hard on everyone because you got to know how to spell Bharat and there's a number in the thing, but it's a spelled out number. But yeah.
All good. Yeah. Sorry. I was putting the website up. There it is. Right.
Oh, nailed it. All right. Thank you so much. That's helpful.
Yeah. There you go. Okay. And so visit the website, get in touch with Bharat. What would step one look like? Is it just that first initial trying to realize the why, I guess, correct?
Absolutely. So, you know, Alyssa and I kind of joke about it sometimes in the sense that we know our why, and our why as a part of this business is to provide value and help however we can, right? And in a business sense about scaling the business, we actually do it in the stupidest possible way, which is we want to form genuine relationships with customized solutions for each and every person that comes through our way where we think that we might be able to help, right? So based on the needs of a program, it kind of depends. So there are some coaches who they could be like, here are the core values that we have. Here's how we do things. I'd be like, okay, cool. Like, we're very far along in the process now. And there could be another coach that comes through and be like, you know, here are the core values. And I'm like, got it. So let me ask you a couple of questions. Let's go back to the drawing board together and really, really refine what this looks like, right? So I know it's not a great answer about what the first step would look like, but really it would just be a genuine conversation, as we talked about like, where are you? Where are the pain points? What have you identified as the things that you think we may be able to help with? And let's go from there, right? The thing that we've really committed to in terms of the basketball sense of culture is, as you've said earlier, big buzzword that a lot of people talk about. I've never actually heard it defined incorrectly. People always talk about it in terms of values and beliefs and how it drives behaviors. And then that's where I've heard the conversation stop. I'm like, it'd be really helpful to hear examples about how coaches have embedded this, right? Or what this looks like in terms of the absolute minute details about how basketball coaches have wound up doing this. So that's where we think we could help, just kind of like, well, here's some things that we've heard that people have done, and this is what it looks like. Let's map out some creative things that we could do with you, you know?
Bharat, what's the biggest thing you've learned from your clients?
The biggest thing I've learned, man, it is very, very difficult to sell people on the idea that this work is never ending. There's no goal in mind where it just stops. Like, it's not like, okay, we got our core values and now we have this well-oiled machine where the culture just operates and we're done, right? As I told you, reality is complex and it's dynamic. It is always changing. So our responses with leadership and culture have to be equally complex and dynamic, right? So just because you feel like you've gotten to a good spot with your culture or where you are in terms of how you're practicing your leadership, there's always tools to add to the toolbox. And people hate that. They're like, what am I paying you for if you're telling me I got to keep doing more work and iterating this, right? But what Alyssa and I kind of say is like, hopefully we're with you for long enough in the process where this is now no longer a motivation thing where you're motivated by wanting a better culture or motivated by wanting to be a better leader. This is a discipline thing. This is just what you do every day. These are the things that you wake up thinking about how you're going to bring your leadership process to a group setting and what your thoughts are about culture and how you can constantly adjust it and improve it, right? And then you won't need us because you have all the habits you've developed and you can make your own decisions. But people really hate the idea that this is difficult. They hate the idea that I can't give them a 10-step plan of how this is going to be done. I think there are other people out there that do it, and no shade at them. They're doing a great job. It's just Alyssa and I are not in the business of not being realistic about what leadership and culture.
Bharat, we lost you.
No, there we go.
Yeah.
I was just going to end on, if there are people who are willing to sit in that discomfort and embrace the uncertainty of reality, we're the right people for you. Like, we can work with you on that. But if what you want is like a plan and actions of like, here are the steps that we take and the stages, this stuff doesn't happen in steps and stages. I don't know what to tell you, you know? The only caveat that I'd say is like, I've been talking to some high school teams and the approach there is a little bit different. High school players are learning about the world, you know, like they're learning about their place in the world and how they're making sense. So we're okay with kind of being like, we don't need to sell you on exactly how difficult leadership is. We're just putting stuff on your plate and on your radar about things that you can practice to go be a more effective leader as you kind of grow and you get your experiences. So it's a little bit simplified of a version, but it's just stuff for you to consider. And as you're engaging with that work, you're going to realize it's very complex.
Is your price points, I mean, you don't have to give me specific numbers, but is it, do you guys work with a lot of high school coaches or high school?
Yeah. So we do. I mean, we are very committed. Again, it comes back to our why, right? If we can help coaches who have access to young people and we can influence them to think about things outside of just basketball or use basketball as a vehicle to go be better leaders in their community, to build cultures in which those young people can thrive and succeed, we'd love to. Does the price point necessarily always make sense? No, but we love this work and we work with, it's an opportunity to talk to young high school players, and at the college level, like the price point's obviously different because the college can pay for it. But also the stakes are much, much, much higher, right? We're much more involved on the college end. The other thing that I'd say, Adam, really quickly is one area that we think that we also could help is for the individual coaches. You are going to be preparing for head coaching interviews as an assistant coach, and you have to be able to nail down, here's a culture I'd build, here's how I define myself, here's how I'd embed that culture, here's how that culture aligns with my personal values, all of that, right? So we can work with individual coaches as well, being like, let's prep you for that job interview, man. And here are the questions that we know. We've heard from some search firms that the administrations ask. They've identified you as a great candidate, but that doesn't mean your prep work is done. You have to have a great answer to this. And it can't be 20 minutes of you rambling about your core and your flex values. It's got to be, here's how I define myself. Let's go, you know?
Okay, great stuff, Bharat. Coaches, I mean, this is the difference between like sustaining success in athletics and not, and having a good year every now and then, is this culture piece and really nailing it down. And if you're not putting in the work to figure this out, then you're leaving money on the table. So visit system2leaders.com, get more info, contact Bharat, get those guys in there, him and Alyssa in there to help you figure out your best culture so that you guys can have sustained success. Bharat, I want to shift gears. I want to get to like the real stuff and talk to you. Put the business hat aside.
Go for it, buddy.
And I mean, we're on similar life paths in that in the last year, we both decided to start our own businesses, right?
Yep.
So talk about that. Like, first of all, were you nervous about it? You had a co-founder. That always helps having somebody in it with you. How's the year been from that perspective?
Adam, I think one of the reasons I'm enjoying talking to you, and I'm just so bummed that this has to be capped at an hour just out of respect to the people listening to it. You're nailing everything, right? Like, the first thing that I tell you every single time about what I'm most thankful for is Alyssa as my business partner. No disrespect to anyone else out there, but she's the perfect business partner for me. We went to the PhD program together, and we literally had the lowest stakes in terms of working together. It's group work for classes. Like, who cares what the grade is, right? But we got the opportunity to figure out, can we work together? How do we communicate? How does this other person think? And we kind of nailed it. I tell her all the time, I have friends who I get along with. We would never get a lick of work done if we were working together. And I got some other friends who I think I could do great work with. I may wind up murdering them at some point because I just can't deal with them, right? So I'm very lucky that the person that I would turn to bounce ideas off of and make sure, are we centered on our why? Are we doing the right things? Are we doing things the right way? And how are we deciding whether we're right? These count as business calls for me now. You know what I mean? Like, I'd just be calling my friend up to ask her what she thinks. And now it's my business partner. So I think that has helped a ton in setting such a high bar for our level of success. In terms of nervousness, full disclosure, I'm extremely privileged to be in the situation that I'm in. I was on full scholarship for my PhD, so I didn't have to pay a dime for that, so I'm not in debt. And I live at home with my parents now, right? So, like, I don't have to worry about rent in San Diego. So I don't want anyone to think that it's an easy route. I'm just taking full advantage of being born on third base, honestly, you know? And I just think that's really, really important to acknowledge, is that a lot of people out there aren't privileged enough to be in this situation. That is also what motivates and drives me, though. I have responsibility to advocate for people who don't have the opportunities that I have, to make their experience either at work or whatever group they're working with better. For a lot of people, that is like they're playing basketball and this is their path to a better life. All right, let's make that experience great and let's get you thinking about leadership and culture. I love what I do. The first year was good. COVID hit, and I guess that's when it was kind of a little bit nerve-wracking. But if you have the privilege, you have the responsibility to find opportunities to have something positive come out of it. And I get to reconnect with the basketball community. I get to hang out with you and talk to you for an hour, man. Like, when was that ever going to happen before? So I'm super thankful for it. I think I'm always energized every day. I go to bed saying I'm thankful for what I did with my day. And I wake up every morning being like, I get to do this. Not I have to do it. I get to do it. Right. So I couldn't be happier, man.
What about the days? All right, every entrepreneur goes through this, right? You got days where you're just like, "What the hell am I doing? I could have gotten I could have gotten a real job." Like,
I hear you.
Had a guaranteed salary.
I got the right person in my corner as my business partner, right? So as you talked about, right, the genuine relationships, right, and to bring it back to Rising Coaches, I mean, you need the people in your corner, and I know you have a wife, and I know you have a 2-year-old, right, and I know you've got those people in your life. You need other people. You need the best board of directors you can have. You need the best team that you have. When you have a basketball background like us, you want to be around people who make you better. And I think I'm just very, very thankful for that. And really quick, Adam, I want to add this in terms of how much I value Rising Coaches. I want to throw a shout out because I used to be a manager. There's something that I know that you sponsor. I think the label is called Grow the Game, right?
Yeah.
And there's some student managers there. I've attended one session and I'm pissed that I haven't attended more. So just really quickly, Jake Serrata, I hope I pronounced that last name right, manager for Clemson basketball, Ashton Pills, manager for Kansas basketball, and I had the opportunity to connect with Tommy Holmes at Oklahoma State men's basketball, who shot me a really nice good luck text this morning, and Ricky Weeps, who is he's going to be a sophomore at Arizona State, and he's the manager. When you talk about genuine connections, the way that they have organized that group to truly form genuine connections. I mean, I felt weird because these people already know each other and they were like family joking around. I'm like, I feel like the 30-year-old guy going back to a frat party in college. Like, I have no idea what's going on here. All of you getting along. The community that they have created is so unbelievable that when you're talking about the difficult days for an entrepreneur, they're going to be difficult days for a coach, and they have that community there. So they deserve all the credit in the world for what they put together. And you deserve a lot of credit for the support that you provided to allow for that, man.
Well, I appreciate it, and I'm glad you found your way to grow the game, because you're right. What Ashton and Jake has done to kind of use the Rising Coaches umbrella to create yet another community to connect, you know, people at their level at the at the managerial positions, and support each other. And that is the most rewarding part of,
I mean, it's unbelievable, Adam. I always used to pride myself on what I thought I was a pretty good student manager and grad assistant. I'm so thankful that I'm not competing for jobs with these guys now, like with Ashton, with Jake, with all of them. I mean, they're a special group to be able to take that level of autonomy and practice that leadership. And all I'd say really quickly is, if you are a manager or grad assistant listening to this now, you're an absolute knucklehead if you don't look up Grow the Game, if you don't get on LinkedIn and shoot Jake and Ashton and a message asking for access to that group, because that's exactly what you should be doing right now if you're a manager or grad assistant. And then to anyone out there who has an intern position available, an entry-level position available, and anything related to basketball, go source from that group. There are some unbelievably talented people who are driven from that group. So figure out a way into that community and go look at them for jobs, because they deserve it, man.
No question. Well said, Bharat. Well, hey, what did we leave out? Anything before we wrap up? Anything that we didn't cover?
If you want to talk about? So, you generated some thoughts. Like, you were talking about sustained success before we went down this round. I'm sorry for going off on a tangent. You talked about how building a culture intentionally creates sustained success, right? I want to just highlight the fact that some coaches sometimes, or some people sometimes, are like, this is too much work. There's too much to do day to day. Adam, I mean, you nailed it, man. Like, culture is what eats strategy for breakfast. You've heard that quote, but it's just true, right? You need to focus on leadership development and growth and development and culture development in order to do this. And the one example that I'd point out is that when times are good, if you know what your core values are and what your culture is, you get to enjoy that celebration for years to come. Those are memories that will never fade. Those get you championship rings. I have one sitting in my security box at the bank because of San Diego State basketball, because we knew our culture, we knew our why, we knew what we were doing. But also, when things are going poorly, if you know what your why is, you can come together as a group and regroup faster than anything else. And I'll tell one very quick story without going into too much detail. San Diego State men's basketball, I think my first year I was there, it was supposed to be a rebuilding year. Year after Kawhi left, year after five seniors graduated, we went 26-8, and we went to the NCAA tournament as a sixth seed. And I was just sitting here being like, if this is what a rebuilding year is, I will rebuild every year. This is a great, right? In the midst of a 26-8 season, we had a three-game losing streak, and no disrespect to any team, there's at least one team I know that we shouldn't have lost to. And our players held a player-only meeting, which I have never been around or seen. And I didn't understand that college players could be that mature, but they held a players only meeting. And then they walked out on the court for practice afterwards. And I went up to our point guard and I was like, hey, I'm not trying to be nosy, but like, how did it go? He was just like, you know, it was pretty chill. Like, we just talked about our why. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, aren't you talking about like twisting ball screens when the defense goes under, or like, we got to get more post touches? It's like, no, dude. We have been stressing so much because this was a rebuilding season. We're playing loose early on. Then we get that number in front of our name to get ranked, right? And now all these outside voices are kind of getting in on us. And we've gotten away from what our why is, which was, we love playing together and we have fun playing together. And there's nothing else that we would rather be doing with our time than playing together. And we've gotten away from that. And that's why we've lost three games, right? And it's like Coach Fisher always says, it's never as good as they say it is when the media and fans are talking. It's never as bad as they say it is when the sky is falling down and people are calling for people to get fired or players to lose minutes or whatever. So he's like, we just talked about our why and we just got to get back to that. And then we go out and we do what we need to do, right? So when you're talking about culture, you're talking about, you can get a player-led team who understands how to reset themselves, that's going to help in March Madness or in a conference tournament with 4 minutes left in the game or 2 minutes left in the game, you don't have any timeouts left and you can't regroup your own players. Well, your culture is going to help with that, man. So I just think it's the height of importance, and make sure you prioritize it.
Bharat, why does every team seem to go through that slide?
So this comes back to what you asked me about corporate, or with my clients, and what I've learned, which is, we constantly gravitate towards making our lives simple, right? And sometimes our culture is dependent on the context that we're in. It's easy for San Diego State basketball in a rebuilding year to have fun and play loose and love each other and play together when it's early in the season and nobody has any expectations for us at all. But as we start winning, the expectations change. That shouldn't change your culture. That shouldn't change how much you commit to your culture. But unfortunately, we did, right? Because you're dealing with a bunch of teenagers where it's like, I'm reading some stuff online, and this is very exciting that we have a number in front of our name now, right? I cannot begin to tell you that how proud I am of that team for being able to come back together, right? But a lot of teams don't. A lot of teams just lose it, and you realize that there was the context that dictated the culture. The way that I would explain it, Adam, is you need to distinguish between a culture of compliance and a culture of commitment. Compliance is your kid is under your household, and you get to influence their habits. You and your wife know when they're leaving the house and when they come back, who their friends are, all that. When your kid turns 18 and they're going to college, hopefully to be a student manager at some team, they're going to be making their own choices, right? So you're not raising the kid that you're raising from the ages of 0 to 18. You're raising your kid to go make great choices in life, right? And sometimes we are the consequence of our surroundings and our context. What you need to do is build a culture of commitment where you're making the right choices no matter what, because they're the right choices, right? You just have the discipline to do the right thing. And I think it's really, really hard to keep a group of people together committed to the same thing, regardless of context. I don't think you're looking for perfection. I just think that you're looking to do that as often as you can. And when things kind of go off the rails, you reset as quickly as you can. And that's when you find out whether your players have bought into your culture or not, because can they reset themselves, yes or no? You got to figure that out, you know?
Bharat, how important is it to have like data and metrics to measure your culture?
Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. You cannot over rely on the analytics or the data or the outcomes, but you need to include it in your assessment. You have to assess it, right? What I will say with this is Alyssa and I have talked about, and this is pretty common in this field of work. There are three questions that every coach should be able to answer. One, why do you coach? So that why. Two, what is your coaching philosophy? So how do you embed the culture and how does this look on day to day? And three is how do you measure success, right? So that measurement aspect of it, right? Success cannot be measured by wins and losses. That's just a byproduct of what you're doing, right? So how do you measure success? It's very, very, very important to take the results that you have from measuring your culture, whether that's a survey or not, whether that's just being able to read body language, whether that's getting together as a staff and throwing around ideas about this person's bought in, this person isn't. You constantly have to reassess what you're doing and you need data in order to do it, right? So however you choose to do that, again, it depends on what you're trying to measure, and it's a very customized solution for whichever program we're looking at.
Great stuff. All right. This has been a real conversation with Bharat Mohan. The website is system2leaders.com. Bharat, thanks so much for joining us today.
Adam, thank you so much for your time, buddy. I appreciate it. We'll be in touch.
Thank you.
Take care.
What's up, podcast fans? I want to share some information about one of our partners, Lucio Sports. The team at Lucio has built an integrated platform of coaching productivity and player development apps that are being used by some of the best basketball programs around the globe, helping everyone from NBA champions to youth development academies. Their innovative and competitive memorization games make it so much easier for new players and staff members to remotely get caught up to speed. With animated playbooks, drill libraries, player development planning and monitoring, engaging game plans and scouting reports, predictive play drawing, their content services team, and more, Lucio Sports has got you covered. From players to coaches to support staff and executives, use Lucio Sports to securely keep everyone in your organization on the same page with simple on-demand access to your team's entire knowledge base. For more information, check out luciosports.com. That's LUCEO sports.com.